Tango Tango Papa 2025, October 16, 2018.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Fort Worth, Texas. Sort of a rainy Fort Worth, Texas. Kind of driven in quite a bit of rain, not really heavy rain, for the past couple of days. And so it's, I don't know how long it's been raining here. But probably, I'm assuming yesterday and then today, it stopped for a while, and it never really has been heavy, at least while I've been here. It looks like it's beginning to sprinkle on the windshield again. So I went ahead and came to the place where I'm going to be unloading at tomorrow. I've got an appointment at noon tomorrow here. And this place where I'm unloading at, it's cold storage, it has overnight parking, and so I went ahead and came on over here, as opposed to parking somewhere else and then trying to drive over here in the morning. Because once I'm already, you know, since I'm already here, I can go ahead and unload, and then the logbook 14-hour clock won't start until I actually leave here. So, by the way, I was at, a few days ago, I was at Omaha, Nebraska, and it was time to get the A service performed on the truck, and that has to be performed by a company shop, and so there is one in Omaha, Nebraska, kind of a smaller one, and so was able to go there after I had a load that unloaded, two-drop load that unloaded in Omaha, and so after that I went to the company shop, and then they were able to perform the A service, but they also did more than that. I don't know, recently, you know, the company periodically sends out messages, and it was saying that they were testing a different system. We've had Qualcomms for quite a few years. We've had this, Qualcomm started out as a two-way satellite communication system, and then in more recent years, it's been a cellular system as opposed to being satellite. And but they tried, there are some competing systems for trucks, and there's this one called PeopleNet. And so they said they were going to try it out in about 50 trucks to begin with. Excuse me. They were going to try it out in about 50 trucks. And so apparently their trial must have gone well, because they're replacing everybody's going to get it now. So they're replacing the whole thing. So they must have determined that it works just as well, and it's probably also less expensive, I'm assuming, this PeopleNet system as opposed to the Qualcomm system. So they took out the Qualcomm and installed this thing called PeopleNet, and it's the equipment doesn't take up as much room in the truck. It's smaller, still fairly, you know, looks pretty rugged. And what this is, it utilizes an Android tablet with about, I'm guessing about a 6 or 7 inch IPS touchscreen. The Qualcomm that I had before was a touchscreen, but it was a resistive touchscreen running, and the operating system was an embedded version of like Windows CE, and it worked okay. My biggest complaint with it was that it could be pretty slow. So this system that's running on Android seems to be faster. It's not super fast, but it does seem to be faster, a little bit more responsive. And so far, I quickly kind of got used to it, and so it's usable. But the first, I don't know. People don't like change, and I really didn't like changing. But I got over it pretty quickly, about 24 hours, and I was fine with it. But really is just a matter of kind of getting used to the little quirks of the system, and I think I've done that. I'm well along the way towards kind of figuring out the quirks of the system, but it seems to be fine. But they did make the switch, and I guess they're replacing all of the Qualcomm units. And I think probably this was probably helped along by the fact of the electronic logs. Now, I've been on electronic logs for probably 3 years at this point, or close to it, and or maybe a little bit more than that. And they were I'm really not into all of the regulations, but they had several times they updated the software in the Qualcomm to make it more compatible with the new electronic log regulations that went into effect in recent months. And I think there was also a grace period that allowed companies a period of time to switch to whatever it is that the system that is sort of favored by the regulations. And I think that probably also helped them decide to switch to this PeopleNet system, because I think it's probably, I'm assuming that it's completely compliant with the equipment requirements, the equipment that is required by the new regulations, the new federal regulations. It must be 100% compliant, and so therefore it can be kind of utilized into the future. And as I say, I'm assuming that it's probably a less expensive ongoing. There's less ongoing expense, because even with this, they're still sort of relying on, this PeopleNet is a third-party type system. So they're relying on PeopleNet's servers. It still runs on a cellular system. One of the main differences is that the PeopleNet is a runs on email, so it's actually each message is actually an email, as opposed to the Qualcomm. I think it was a messaging system, but I think it was more of a proprietary database type system. Now, I might be wrong about that, but it was not an email system. Whereas this really is running on email, so it's running on PeopleNet's email server, and so each message that gets sent and received is actually an email going to an email to and from an email address. So that's one of the main differences. And then, of course, there's also the electronic logging that's built into it as well, which I'm assuming that's probably more of a database-type system. But so far, it seems to be working fine, and there's a PeopleNet telephone app as well. They've got an iOS version as well as an Android version. And with that, I can send and receive messages and view the status of the electronic logs, although I don't seem to be able to control the logs through the phone. I can or make any updates to the logs on the phone, but I can send and receive messages on the phone. So that's, you know, kind of useful to be able to do that. Of course, I could do the same thing with the Qualcomm system, kind of running. I have this app that I send my paperwork in called TransFlow, and that also included the Qualcomm messaging system. So I still use the TransFlow app to send my paperwork to the company. The messaging part of that is sort of, you know, I just kind of ignore it now as far as that TransFlow app. So, as I say, I've kind of gotten used to this. This has the unit itself has a really nice IPS touchscreen panel. And, it's actually touchscreen as opposed to the resistive. This is capacitive. And so it's seems to be fairly high resolution. So it's the images are pretty clear. Whereas with that Qualcomm, as I say, it was a resistive touchscreen, and it had kind of a lower resolution. It wasn't super sharp. So. But in any case, change is made, and it's, as I say, it seems to be working okay. So, one of the things I wanted to talk about, have you ever stopped to think, and some people, I don't know, I think about this all the time, why are we here? That's a question that has been with me forever. Why are we here? Why do I exist? You know, because if you are really honest about that, why should anything exist? Why should anything exist? And so if you think about just in terms of your ancestors and their DNA, you know, if you look at just your parents, what were the odds that your parents would get together and that you would be born? But then beyond that, you have grandparents and great-grandparents, and, you know, going back however long, what were the odds that you or I would even exist? You know, the odds of it I wouldn't want to bet on those odds like Las Vegas. Of course, I don't bet anyway. But what are the odds of that? The odds would have to be pretty minuscule that really any single one of us would exist, let alone the whole human race. You know, so it's, if you can really honestly think about that, people really have to twist it in their minds to think that this is all some sort of cosmic accident. You know, and they don't like you to say that. They'll say, well, evolution explains why it's not an accident. Well, I'm sorry, but it doesn't. Because in the final analysis, how did the dust become aware of itself? You know, can you answer that question? No, you can't. And if you want to take it beyond just the realm of human beings, what are the odds that, a Coke can would exist, for example? You know, just take, you know, you got a Coke can, or let's say you've got a ketchup bottle or something, you know, and you look at that, and is that a natural thing? Do they mine for the ketchup bottles full of ketchup? Do they mine for the Coke cans full of Coke, or Dr. Pepper, or the soft drink of your choice? You look at something like that, and it's obviously designed. It didn't just happen. What are the odds that a Coke can would simply evolve? what are the odds that a ketchup can would simply evolve? And those are very simple things, really. Let alone a human being with DNA. You know, so the idea that this is all just some sort of accident, or somehow it emerges. You have a, you know, because they like to, sometimes they like to talk about emergent behavior or emergent phenomenon, that it just somehow it just emerged. Never mind, it just emerged. It's absurd. It's utterly absurd. Things don't just simply emerge. You know, and of course, the whole thing with people, the rabid atheists, what's really at the root of that, with the typical rabid atheist, the typical person wanting to believe in evolution, what's really at the root of that, they really want to get rid of any kind of morality. Because obviously, if it was all simply an accident, and it just kind of happened somehow that human beings exist, then there can't be any wrong or right. There can't be any moral structure. Then you have some people that like, you know, Ayn Rand, and I like Ayn Rand. You know, and if you're not familiar with Ayn Rand, of course, Ayn Rand wrote Atlas Shrugged, and she has came up with the philosophy of, she called it objectivism, and the idea, you know, you know that as a, of course, she claimed to be an atheist. She wasn't rabid about it, by the way, but she claimed she died, I think, in 1982. But she, a very super intelligent woman, she claimed to be an atheist. She was born in Russia and then immigrated to the United States. So she was born under communism, but she was, you know, the philosophy of objectivism basically is that if you can really be objective, as a, you know, kind of intellectually objective, that the idea is that you can come to moral principles simply through the process of being logical and objective. And perhaps you can, but the average person is not going to do that. You know, maybe if you're Ayn Rand and you're, you know, she was remarkably intelligent. Maybe if you're that person, then you can objectively come to, you know, using reason, you can come to some sort of moral standards or moral rules. But you know, the question is, if you're, you know, you can talk about being objective, but are you, you know, when a person talks about being objective, are they really objective? Because you can, you know, someone that is really trying to get rid of morals, that wants to reject any idea of God, any kind of idea that there are moral standards, someone like that isn't really objective. They're biased. And so I contend that if you're really objective, then you will kind of end up encountering your creator. And the vast majority of us see our creator, we encounter our creator, and we tend to think of it as a guilty conscience, and we try to dismiss it. We try to go to all kinds of different lengths to distract ourselves away from it. But at the end of the day, it is there, and it's that I believe that our conscience is essentially God talking to us. And so I believe that the person that is truly objective, that isn't trying to run away from conscience, but allows conscience to catch up with him or her, that's where a real objective state is able to kind of emerge. And then you can kind of allow the objective state to kind of catch up with you. But if as I say, many people that claim to be atheists are actually running away, the rabid atheist types that kind of turn atheism into a religion and try to stamp out and argue with people that are religious or believe in God. They'll try to argue and argue and argue, and sort of end up wanting to use the state as kind of a secular fundamentalism, making the state into a religion. They're really trying to get rid of any kind of conscience. They're trying to get rid of any kind of moral standards. Then it's all, because if there is no God, then the idea is, well, there is no right and there is no wrong. It's all shades of gray. We can kind of do whatever we want to, and nothing matters. Well, I'm sorry, but that doesn't work. You end up with hell on earth in that kind of situation, where you have too large a percentage of the population is separated from their creator, separated from conscience. You have too large of the percentage of the population separated from conscience, separated from any kind of moral standards, then you end up with hell on earth. And then there is no meaning to life. Nihilism sort of sets in. So, we really do need the right kind of philosophy. Now, and I don't know, in America, I think upwards of half of the population, or probably half of the population, it's really hard to say, but I think, just from my encounters with people, I think that most people kind of do end up, to a large extent, kind of following their conscience. You'd never know it by reading, kind of following any kind of media, especially now. They're really kind of going insane right now. They have been for the past 2 years. Not only the so-called, the new so-called news media, but as well as the Hollywood media have just been going crazy. And if you look at the movies, and you can see the pattern is starting to emerge. If you look at movies, the movies, they've kind of taken over. Someone decided somehow, somewhere, that they were going to just kind of take over all of these, especially these so-called movie franchises. And then you have the so-called social justice warriors that are that have kind of taken these things over. And they've, so far they've ruined Star Trek. They've ruined Star Wars. The latest, the people that have been in charge of the latest Star Wars movies for Disney have kind of ruined that. Where the movies that they're making are kind of, they've got, this so-called, social justice messages or whatever, and they've kind of twisted things around you know, and you, they're also doing it with a lot of TV shows. Even, you know, so the, and I don't watch a whole lot of broadcast TV. I don't watch any, but even in the programming that's made for a lot of the programming that's made for Netflix and other services, they've kind of infected that as well. That Lost in Space, this new newer thing of Lost in Space. I guess it came out, I don't know, probably the better part of a year ago. It is all, you know, it's just all kind of infected with the so-called SJW ideas. And, you know, so they're trying, they really think that they can reprogram people. And maybe some of them they can, but it's interesting. There's this meme that recently emerged just within actually the past few days, and it's called NPC, and I don't know if you've seen that or not. NPC, if you're a gamer, which I am not, but apparently I know a lot of people are, and so an NPC in a gamer context is a so-called non-playable character. And so it's sort of a, you know, kind of a person type entity that you might encounter. Well, let's say it's an entity that you, you know, like a person that you might encounter in a game. And that person is not, you know, it's not a playable character or so-called NPC. And so it just kind of might give some sort of a canned response. Or it might even give some sort of a glitchy kind of a response. And so there's this meme going around just in the past few days that has that the so-called social justice warrior types really don't like, and they really find it upsetting. And the idea is that they're just NPCs. They just the social justice warrior types. You can't really argue with them. They lose the argument, then they start calling you racist. They'll start calling you all kinds of names and what have you. And it's sort of like they've just got programmed responses, and that's really true. And so there's a germ of truth in there, and that really is why they are upset, because they is another thing you could say. Well, they just have knee jerk reactions, or they respond. They have knee-jerk responses to words, certain words and phrases, and they cannot think for themselves. And so this puts it into a context that it's interesting that it puts it into a context that really bugs them, because people have been saying that about them for years, that they have their little canned responses. But for some reason, this puts it into a context that they're able to understand, and they really don't like it. So I think even Twitter, I keep reading the thing, Twitter is in the process of banning any kind of NPC memes. But I think it's pretty funny, really. But there is a germ of truth to it. To a certain extent, we've all got our little knee-jerk things that we do, or we have certainly that we've done in the past. And of course, for years, I love to examine, why do I do what I do? Without making excuses for it. Sort of objectively examining, why do I do what I do? And of course, part of that is allowing conscience to catch up with you. Because if you can really allow your conscience to catch up with you, that is part of the examination process. Why something comes, you know, conscience kind of brings something up, and you feel kind of really guilty about something, you know, whatever it is in the past. It's usually in the past. You don't run away from it, but so you just kind of sit there and be aware of it. Why did I do that? Why did I behave that way? And that's how you kind of deal with things. Is just, you know, sort of let that conscience catch up with you. And then really examine something. And then, if you truly examine something when your conscience brings it up, then you don't have to repeat it in the future. The behavior is going to stop repeating. The loop is gonna quit kind of happening. You know, if you're familiar with programming at all, you have programming loops. You know, and a loop will keep repeating until the condition changes and it gets a different result before the program can move on. But programs can get stuck in loops. People get stuck in loops. They keep doing the same things over and over, expecting a different result. So this NPC meme, there's enough of a germ of truth in it that some people are really kind of surprised by it. And they don't like it. They're sort of repelled by it, and but that's just happened. That just came up within the past few days. And if you've never heard of it, just look it up on YouTube. There are plenty of videos about it now because it's created such a reaction. And it is worth understanding what it is, you know, because there's videos and articles that kind of explain the meme, explain what it is, and a thoughtful person is going to really be able to understand it. And as I say, to a certain extent, we've all done it. We all have our knee-jerk reactions. But as I say, if you can become friends with your conscience, allow conscience to catch up with you, then that's the condition that changes that gets you out of the loop. Otherwise, you're just going to end up repeating the loop over and over again, endlessly. So, but the other thing I wanted to talk about, I was watching a YouTube video and the guy was talking about a book that I had never heard of. And it's called Primal Branding. And this book, I had an Audible credit for October, and so I found there's an audiobook version of Primal Branding on Audible. So I went ahead and got it, and it's about 7 hours, and it's an interesting audiobook. But basically, the guy, and this was written probably sometime in the 2000s, so the book has been around for a while. But the idea is it's about marketing. And but the guy's talking about what sets apart, a brand, pick a brand like Apple, or Apple's a great example, of course. What drives that brand? What causes the consumer response that Apple gets, for example? And what the guy is saying, and he doesn't really come out and say it until the very end of the book. He kind of lightly says really what it is. although he's kind of hinting at it all along, you basically, he says, you have to, you know, there's seven elements that a company has to come up with that gives the people, you know, the consumers, the customers, gives them something to believe in. You can't just, it's not enough to just create good products and what have you and advertise and have company logos and what have you. You've really got to give people something to believe in. And so he came up with like seven elements that are necessary. And basically what he's saying, and I already knew it, but basically what he's saying is that you've kind of got to make it a religious experience. And Apple has done a very good job with that. And so, you know, Apple is sort of a quasi-religion. It has very, it has religious cult aspects to it. As well as the argument Ford versus Chevrolet, there are you know, sort of cult like aspects of that, or at least traditionally there have been. And see if I can find the, I'll just look this up real quick. Let's see here. Primal branding.
Here's some information about primal branding. Create sellouts for your brand, your company, and your future.
Okay, so let's see if they've listed the, seven factors of primal branding. Okay, so let's see if it lists them somewhere. Because I didn't know I was going to talk about this, or I might have had a list. No, that's just trying to sell it. Let's see. Yeah, the book was written 12 years ago. Okay, companies don't come with a soul, you have to create one. So the author's name is Patrick Hanlon. Okay, so does he list the seven elements? Okay, here we go. So you have a creation story. This is the story about you, what life experience has contributed to who you are and how you got started. Okay, this is in relation to YouTube. So, you know, how you got started, basically. Creed, what do you believe in? How does that bring people together, your customers? Then you have leaders. You have to have leaders for the, you know, so, you know, so in the case of Apple, you know, you got the Apple creation story, you know, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak building the computers in their, in Steve Jobs' parents' garage. So that was the creation story. And then they've got the creed, and, you know, you can kind of figure that out for Apple, I guess. And then the leadership, of course, was Steve Jobs. And now it's Tim Cook. And then what's the other? Can't think of the other guy's name, but you know what I'm talking about. You know, the primarily now it'd be Tim Cook. And then you have rituals. So, you know, and Apple's got plenty of rituals. You know, they go to the thing ever so often, and it's almost like a religious service that they have, where they present new products, and the visiting preachers would be the people from different companies that are making their presentations on the Apple, whatever the new product is, you know, there maybe a new game or something. And then you have language. And of course, Apple's got all kinds of language. You know, you got the words, sacred words like Mac and iPhone and iPad, etc., etc. Let's see, that was a five. Where's six and seven? Is he not going to list 6 and 7? He didn't list 6 and 7. Well, another one was you have to have, basically, you have to have an enemy. You know, because all religious cults need an enemy. And so, in this case, it would be the competitors. They have to have something to demonize. And so, they demonize what, you know, in the case of Apple, they've, for years, the enemy was Microsoft, as I've said many times before. The demon was Windows. In more recent years, it switched now to Android. You know, they've decided that Microsoft isn't quite the enemy that it once was, and Windows isn't quite the enemy that it once was, and so they switched to, since all the emphasis has been on the iPhone, then Android became the great big Satan. And he doesn't list the fifth thing, but basically it's kind of giving, you know, it's kind of creating a religion to a large extent. So let's see if I can find the other two. That's going to bug me now. Let's see if that one. Nope. Hey. Kind of looking through. This makes for a really boring podcast, doesn't it? That's the same story. It's just copied. I think that's the same thing, too. How much you want to bet? Okay. That's trying to sell it. Okay. Okay, how about this? Primal Branding 7. Okay, so you have Creation Story, a creed. Okay, so Creation Story, all Beacon brands have an origin story about how they got here. Every person, place, or thing that was started somewhere by someone, somehow. Apple started in the garage, so did HP. Facebook started in a dorm. eBay started in a bedroom office. The inspiration for Velcro was the thistle. Rome was started by two twins. It's not just about history, it's about legacy. Creed. Every brand has core values and beliefs, a reason for being. Think different, just do it. E pluribus unum. Semper Fi, when we establish our values and what we live for, we attract others who share those values. Justice for all. Okay, why do we come to work in the morning? Icons. Okay, now the icon would be, of course, in the case of Apple, it would be the Apple logo. You know, with the Apple with the outline of the Apple with the bite taken out of it. And then, you know, so it's not only the logo, but the design. You know, so the iPhone and the iPad and the iMac and the MacBook, etc., etc. Sacred words. Every brand community creates its own lexicon that is understood by those in the community, but not by outsiders. If you think of brand communities as nations, you know the larger sense of needing to know French, English, Chinese, and other languages. With smaller communities, you might need to know terms of art used in legal profession, medicine, computer design, marketing, as well as the language of fashionistas, computer hackers, baseball fans, chess players, yoga instructors, paddleboarders, skateboarders, surfers, triathletes, blah, blah, blah. Gang signs are a special lexicon, so are iced, grade, skinny, decaf, latte, ROTFL, Uncanny Valley, and Ruby on Rails. Okay, and now there's he calls them non-believers. Every brand group has its haters, people who do not want to be in your community. Think of Mac versus PC, Democrats versus Republicans, vegans, carnivores, Brooklyn, Manhattan, New York City, Los Angeles, Mom, Dad. By the way, there's nothing like someone else telling you that you or what you believe is wrong to help solidify your beliefs. And then the leader, every brand community has a leader, the hero or innovator who set out against all odds to recreate the world according to their own point of view. So, basically, you have to create a kind of a religion. And if you do it really well, then, you know, you can become Apple. But, and I think that's more likely. I've talked about this in the past. I think it's more likely to happen today because you've got so many people that really don't have anything to believe in. Their lives are sort of empty, and they really haven't, they've been kind of separate, you know, deliberately separated, but, you know, and it kind of happens by culture, and part of it's deliberate. Separated from any kind of core values. And so they're just kind of drifting along empty, you know, why, you know, kind of in a nihilistic state. And so then, you know, a commercial brand comes along and kind of gives them something to believe in. And then that's, they make, you know, some people, the really rabid ones, make their entire identity out of it. And there, you know, Apple is a great example. There are plenty of people that have made, you know, being customers of Apple, they've kind of turned that into their entire existence. It sort of kind of defines them in many ways. And they really kind of feel better, you know, they've used that as a means of feeling better about themselves because they're superior. Because they use it, they have their iPhone, they have their Apple products, they have their Macs. They're superior to, you know, the other people that don't have those things. So, so in any case, this guy, you know, kind of laid all of this out in sort of marketing terms. And at the very end, he basically, he finally mentions the word religion. But it was an interesting book, nonetheless, and of course he's using it as a way of sort of you know, kind of a, you know, in terms of a, you know, how to set up your brand, or you know, how to make your brand more successful, and you know. So, it's kind of interesting. Now, at the end, towards the end of the book, he kind of says, "Oh, well, it doesn't matter whether you believe in, you know, if you're believing in a religion, or if you believe in Apple, or you believe in this, or you believe in that. It really doesn't matter. You have your belief system." Well, actually, it does matter, and here's why. Let's say that you have your Apple computer and you have your iPhone, and you really believe in Apple, and you've really gotten into it, and you love paying the money for the product, and it's kind of given you an identity. Well, here's the problem. You know, maybe the computer's fine, maybe the phone works great. And they do, you know, the iPhones do work okay. They work just fine. But here's the problem. It's empty. It's an empty belief system. You have your Sony TV, you know, back in the day when Trinitron kind of ruled the roost, the video roost. For years, Trinitron was the best TV that you could get. And people would pay more, a premium for it. I know I did. More than once. I paid the premium to get the Sony Trinitron TV. But at the end of the day, did that make me a better person? No. How long did I feel better about myself? Not very long. And in fact, the more you do that, if you try to buy your way into, you know, in the case of, you know, because this guy's talking about consumer items, typically. So you buy into the groupthink, kind of become part of the Apple religious cult, for example. You're going to be, at the end of the day, you're going to be more empty than when you started. So, you know, then you have to keep yourself distracted, you know, so that what do you distract you? Well, Apple has to come out with new products to help you remain distracted, help keep you distracted. You got something new. There always has to be something new. Some kind of change. Not always for the better. Apple takes features away. Oh, this is new. It's better. You pay more. You're going to feel better about yourself. It's more expensive than ever. So at the end of the day, it does matter what you believe. And you really don't need these different products, you know, because there's this idea, and I know I felt it. You think, well, if I buy this and I buy that, and I, you know, I'm a better consumer somehow, and I'm a better person because I'm a more savvy, I'm a smarter consumer, so therefore I'm a better person. And that's just it's a rationalization that many people kind of glom onto, and I know because I've done it. And I'm not saying, you know, you can't buy a nice product. I'm not saying that. Why are you buying the nice product? Is really what the question is. What's motivating you to buy that night, whatever the product is? Are you buying the product, or are you simply buying the product, or are you buying into the groupthink to feel part of the, you know, part of the religious cult? And in the case of, you know, the people, they go to the Starbucks or whatever, and then they flash their Apple logos at each other. Why do you think they put, you know, they have the little hole on the back of the iPhone cases so you can see the Apple logo shows through? Then people can flash their, they can flash their Apple logo. Show, hey, I'm part of the group. Part of the group think. But at the end of the day, you're just an empty, you know, whatever it is you're consuming to try to feel better about yourself, it's going to leave you more empty than when you started. If that's why you're doing it. And oftentimes it is. So it's far more satisfying, as I was talking before, if you can just allow conscience to catch up with you. Make friends with your conscience. After all, a real friend, a genuine friend, can tell you the truth. So if you're really friends with your conscience, then your conscience can tell you the truth, and it believe me, it can be painful. the truth can be very painful. And if you're a genuine friend with your conscience, you're not going to run away. A genuine encounter with the truth without running away, without trying to jump into a distraction, a genuine encounter with the truth makes you a better person. That's the only thing that makes, that can make you a better person. Doesn't matter, you know, you can buy this and buy that and, you know, be, you know, think that you're a good consumer or whatever, that you're smart with this and smart with that. And if you're not careful, it just makes you worse. Chances are you've done it in order to distract yourself from the truth. So if you can really make friends with your conscience, allow that conscience to catch up with you, become friends with it. You can still be a consumer. You know, it's not going to stop you from being a consumer. But you won't be doing it. If you buy something, you won't be doing it for the wrong reasons. By the way, you can buy something without feeling guilty about it. For example. Because I used to, you know, I used to buy things and then I'd feel guilty and I'd wonder, well, why do I feel guilty? Just because I bought this or I bought that, why do I feel guilty? And I thought I couldn't, you know, I thought that was strange. Why would I feel guilty? Well, of course, now I realize that I felt guilty. Why did I feel guilty when I'd buy things when I was younger? Because it was a distraction. I was running away. Running away from conscience. So that's all you really have to do, is allow that conscience to catch up with you. Yeah, I mentioned it again. Go to my website, truckertompodcast.com. Up at the top, there's a link that says meditation. Click on that link. There are about four files that are hosted on my website that you can right-click on and download or listen to them on your device. It teaches you a very simple meditation technique. I can't promise it'll help everybody, but I do believe it will help most people. Give it a try. But I'll tell you this much. If you find that it helps you, then it's up to you to continue with it. You can't just do it once, and it's not something that you do once and forget about. If you find that it helps you, then it's up to you to continue with it. It's not something to just mess around with. The question is, how serious are you? Do you really want to know the truth? Are you really looking for your Creator? Or are you looking for something that's simply going to make you feel better? I've had people that try, you know, I've had a couple, you know, at least once, I've had maybe twice, I've had people that have tried to turn me into a religious cult. You know, and I've warned them all along. You listen to me at your own peril. You listen to me, you know, and that sounds like a joke or whatever, and it's kind of funny when I say it. Sounds kind of funny. But I'm only half joking. I'm kind of, there's a serious side to it. You listen to me at your own risk. Because, you know, you try to use me as a distraction, it could end up being dangerous, because I'm going to, you know, hopefully if I do my job right, I'm going to kind of throw you, you know, continue to throw you back on yourself and kind of make you realize that, you know, you're trying to use me as a distraction. And I'm going to keep pointing the truth out. That's what a good friend does. As I said before, a good friend, a genuine friend, should be able to tell you the truth without you running away. What kind of a friend lies to you? What kind of a friend makes you feel good about yourself? That's no friend at all in my book. If I'm walking around and my pants are unzipped, for God's sakes, tell me. You're not going to hurt my feelings. So. But anyway, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off and then... I don't know, what time is it? It's not, so I'll probably stay up for a while longer. The delivery appointment isn't until noon tomorrow, so I'll go in there and take the paperwork into them in the morning, and then the way this works here at this warehouse, they take down the phone number, and then they'll call me whenever they're ready for me to back into a door, so it may be... it may be tomorrow afternoon before, I'm fully expecting it'll be tomorrow afternoon before the load's unloaded. Let's see, so tomorrow is the 17th. So 18, 19, 20, 21. I'm due home on the 22nd. I think I'm due home on the 22nd, so I'm due home in about 5 days, so I'll start reminding them of that. I actually started reminding them today, so then I have an appointment on the 23rd with my dermatologist to take the stitches out of my back. You know, because the stitches are still there. The back, you know, that seems to have healed up rather nicely, but the stitches are still there, and they're probably ready to come out. So they'll be coming out in, I guess, about a week or a little bit less. And... you know, but the wound seems to be pretty nicely healed, and it hasn't given me any kind of problems at all. So get the stitches taken out, and then I can kind of forget about that for a while. Hope that that doesn't happen anymore. And if it does, it's not going to happen in the same place. You know, and I'm referring to the cyst that I had. So, anyway, and then I think, when did I do the last podcast? Let me take a look here real quick. When did I do the last podcast? Let's see. So this is, what's the date on that? It doesn't tell me. Oh, yes, it does. Six. Excuse me. So I think I mentioned that I got the metal roof on my house. I believe I mentioned that in the last podcast. If I didn't, I'm mentioning it now. So when I was home the last time, I got the metal roof put on my house, and it did maybe seem to attenuate my cell phone signal just a little bit. I didn't really get to test that very extensively. So I did call Sprint. Sprint has this thing. It's a sort of a cell phone booster for Sprint only called Sprint Magic Box. And they've got the new version is supposed to be out sometime, I don't know, towards the end of October or maybe into November. And so the guy is supposed to call me and tell me when that's out, and then maybe set me up to receive that. So we'll see. But they're supposed to call me. Now, whether they do or not, that's a good question, but you know, it's possible that they will. So anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.